Hello, my name is Phil Lawler. I'm senior fellow at the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at Thomas More College, and I welcome you to my Book of the Month Club. Every month, I arrange to have a conversation with the author of a recently published book that I've found particularly interesting, something that offers a provocative perspective on one or more of the topics that are of particular interest to our center. Those topics are education in the liberal arts, the defense and promotion of marriage and family life, active Christian involvement in civic life, the arts, and the teachings of the Catholic Church. I hope these podcasts will stimulate further conversations as well as interest in our center. If you enjoy what you hear today, please check back to the website of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture and take a look at some of our other conversations in this Book of the Month series, as well as other offerings from our center. Please also sign up for regular email notices about coming events, both online presentations and live events. Finally, if you're able, please support our work by making a contribution to the work of the center. You'll find a handy form on our website as well. All contributions are appreciated and all are tax deductible. Now on to this month's conversation. My guest today is George Weigel, the Distinguished Senior Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. George is the official biographer of Pope John Paul II and the author of many of his own books, but today we're discussing a book that he edited, a collection of essays by our mutual friend, the late Father Paul Mankowski. Father Paul Mankowski was a good friend to both of us. I'm guessing that this work, editing the book of his essays, was a labor of love for you.
It certainly was, Phil. I was shocked, as were so many people, including you and Lila, I'm sure, at Paul's death. It came as a total surprise and a grievous loss to the church in the United States. A few days afterwards, it occurred to me that this remarkable personality, this remarkable priest, this remarkable Jesuit needed to be memorialized in some fashion. And collecting some of his more significant essays and book reviews struck me as a good way to do that. So I called our friend Mark Brumley at Ignatius Press, suggested doing this, that I would take responsibility for collecting the essays, editing them, and writing an introduction. And so now we have Jesuit at Large, the collected essays and reviews of Paul V. Mankowski, S.J. I'd much rather have him, but for those who did not have the privilege of knowing him, this is perhaps the next best thing.
It is, and it's a distant second best. How many times in the last year have you found yourself saying, gee, I wish I could talk to him about this?
Probably every other day, at least.
At least.
It's just a default position in my psyche, and I suspect it'll remain that way for a while.
Yeah. One of the pleasures of editing him, which I had because some of these essays appeared in magazines for which I was editor, is he's a terrific writer. And I was looking through this book and most of the essays I had read before, I was noticing one of the things that makes him such a terrific writer is the multiplicity of references. He will quote from Shakespeare or from the Bible or from Evelyn Waugh, a particular favorite of his, but also from pop culture and from football coaches and from the taxi driver he just encountered. He has a terrific range and an ability to pull the similes from out of nowhere that make him a pleasure to read.
It does. And I think, Phil, on reflecting about that, it is an expression of Father Mankowski's deep Christocentric faith. He really believed that the second person of the Blessed Trinity became incarnate in Jesus of Nazareth, suffered, died, and was raised from the dead for everyone. That everyone you meet is a someone for whom the incarnation happened. And that's why he was interested in everything. I mean, I cannot think of any single subject in which Paul Mankowski was not interested, and not just interested, but knowledgeable. I suppose the only thing I never talked to him about was music. I mean, in my own memorial column for him, I wrote that I hope the angels had queued up Bruckner's H.A. Sacerdos Magnus, which I had to sing as a choir boy, to welcome him into the kingdom. And someone said to me, well, did you discuss Bruckner's H.A. Sacerdos Magnus with Father Mankowski? I said, no, now that you mentioned it, I think the only thing we didn't talk about was music. But now he was he had incredible range and deep knowledgeability across that range. It wasn't just breadth, it was depth.
That's right. And equally broad array of acquaintances to match that, who he treated the same way.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one example of this, as I laugh thinking back on it, is there was a pizza joint in Rome that he favored off the Campo dei Fiori. And he used to refer to it as Parcells, because the owner of it seemed to him to have been separated at birth from Bill Parcells, the legendary coach of the New York Giants. So that place simply became Parcells. And that's just one example of how he worked, to use a favorite phrase today, multiculturally.
Anyone who reads this book, Jesuit at Large, is going to come away from it with his own reading list of books that Father Mankowski cites, that you read about them and you say, oh, I've got to pick up that book. That's another example of the breadth of his knowledge and interests.
It also is a good negative reading list. I mean, the demolition job that he does on Norman Mailer, on A.N. Wilson, on James Martin, S.J., and others who offended him intellectually, is really quite delicious. Paul could be a fierce critic, but it was with a scalpel, not a bludgeon. He didn't use a sledgehammer. He used a scalpel. But at the end of the day, you needed the dental records to identify the
and, he was devastating.
And it was all richly deserved in the matter of his targets, I must say.
Well, of course, that's a characteristic, that he had a lot of time for everybody except pretentious intellectuals, and not much time for them. And they didn't last long.
And he didn't have much time for duplicitous clergy. I think it's important to think of Paul not as a conservative, certainly not as a reactionary, but as a radical reformer. He wanted the Society of Jesus to be what Ignatius intended. He wanted the Catholic priesthood to be what the Lord intended. He wanted religious life to be what the great men and women of consecrated life throughout the centuries intended. He understood that we're all sinners, including himself. But he also understood that one should never lower the bar of expectation. When we fail, we should get up, dust ourselves off, seek reconciliation and penance, and not lower the bar of expectation. So in that sense, I think he should be remembered as a genuine reformer.
You know, I think he was also a very first-rate diagnostician of what needed to be reformed. And I leaned on him, and I'm sure you did too, for an assessment of who could be relied on and who could not in the process of reform. One of the essays that I think is really valuable, well, all of these essays are very valuable, but one of my favorites is Thames in Clerical Life, which was a really pointed diagnosis of why we have so many people in power in the clerical world who are not enemies of reform, but are never going to be part of the reform. I think he had his finger on it in that essay.
He was an acute observer of institutions and of culture, and of how institutions can become culturally corrupted. He would often say of some institutions in the church that it's like a corrupt police department. When you reach a certain critical mass of corrupt police officers in a department, you can't fix it by getting rid of the worst of the bad apples. You've got to blow the thing up and start again. And I think that was his view of some institutional dimensions of Catholic life. He understood how a soft culture of, we might call it anti-manliness, had deeply affected clerical life. I'm not sure he was as attuned to the genuine reform that I believe has gone on in American seminaries over the last 10 or 15 years, because he was so focused on the continuing corruptions of religious life and clerical life. But his cautions were always worth listening to. And I would say 9 times out of 10, he was right in raising the cautions he raised.
There's another little tidbit that struck me this morning as I was preparing for this conversation. In an essay, The Prayer of Lady Macbeth, he makes a point that he made over and over in various times, in various ways, about how the radical progressive critique of the Catholic Church has to hold the church to some standard of judgment. And it is, as he puts it, if the church is wrong in humanae vitae, the judgment that it is wrong can only be made with reference to some standard. That standard obviously cannot be the church herself. This is a point I found him making again and again, that if you reject what the church teaches on a particular issue, how can you revive your confidence that your church is right on other issues?
To borrow a phrase from Cardinal Bernardine, for whom Paul did not have a whole lot of regard, Paul was a genuine seamless garment guy, consistent ethic guy. He understood that while Catholic truth was symphonic, there are many instruments in the orchestra. It was also unitary in the sense that it all fit together into a coherent package, such that if you deny, for example, the truth of humanae vitae, the truth about the dignity of the human person that lies at the basis of humanae vitae, then eventually you're going to end up where we've ended up. You're going to end up saying, well, the abortion issue, it really isn't that urgent. Trans people should be accompanied rather than given some serious help. The church's whole sexual ethic is stuff and nonsense. And then if you unravel that far enough, you really end up denying the incarnation. Because if the incarnate Christ, as Second Vatican Council taught in paragraph 22 of Gaudium et Spes, the pastoral constitution on the church in the modern world. If the incarnate Christ reveals the truth about our humanity, and you say, well, the church really isn't teaching the truth about the ethics of human love and humani vitae, then you end up saying that Christ does not teach the truth about our humanity. I mean, it all goes together.
Right.
And he understood that in a particularly clarifying way. And then in a piece like that Lady Macbeth thing, you just had a creative talent for making what can seem a complex theological point luminously clear through analogies that no one else would possibly think of.
Exactly. You are, I know, on a deadline, but I can't let you go without asking you to speak a little bit about the long appendix in this book, which tells an important story about the career of Paul Mankowski as a Jesuit.
Thanks for bringing that up. When I was assembling these materials, it occurred to me that there was one item previously unpublished. Everything else in the book had been published before. It was one thing that was unpublished that needed to be put on the public record. And that was Paul's explanation of his involvement in the Drinan affair, the description of the truth of how Father Robert Drinan got to Congress and stayed in Congress that had been documented from the archives of the New England province of the Jesuits. This all became a huge controversy when Professor Jim Hitchcock, friend of Mankowski's, mine, yours, just about everybody's, wrote a long article in Catholic World Report about this, drawing on these documents from the archives of the New England province. Paul was charged with great duplicity and virtual treason to the Society of Jesus because of this. He had, after many years, written a memorandum explaining exactly what had happened, what it meant, why he had done what he had done, and shared this with friends privately. I had had this in my possession for many years. Immediately after his death, several friends, including several Jesuits, sent it to me and said, something needs to be done with this to clear the record, because he had been accused falsely of all sorts of perverse actions in respect of his religious community. So I reread the memorandum several times and decided that he must have wanted this to go on the public record at some point. So I decided to make it the appendix of the book, both to clarify the public record on a very important matter in U.S. Catholic history, and to defend the honor of a man who, having died, was no longer able to defend his integrity and his honor on his own. So I hope people read that appendix as an important contribution to modern Catholic Church history and as a vindication of Paul Mankowski. That was the intention in putting it into the book.
And as an explanation, perhaps, of the why it is that many people who are hearing us talk now on recording are not familiar with Paul Mankowski, and they should be. He was denied many opportunities to speak and write, and I think part of what we're doing, what you're doing here, and what we're doing in this conversation is letting people know about this unappreciated resource. It's something that all Catholics and all Americans should discover is the work of Father Paul Mankowski.
He was a great gift to all of us who were his friends. He was a great gift to the church in the United States. And through this book and others that I hope will be published of various others of his works. I hope he becomes a gift that keeps on giving.
I hope so. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Phil. It's always good. Always good to talk to you.
Hi, my name is Dominic Casella, and you've been listening to Phil Lawler's Book of the Month Club at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture. If you're interested in learning more about the center or getting other more of our content that we've been producing, videos, podcasts, articles, visit restorationchristianculture.org. If you haven't already, please consider becoming a monthly donor. Our good work would not be possible without your support. $5, $10, $20, it goes a long way here for our little operation. God bless and take care. Thank you so much.